This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
This scenario where they end up playing with the American at some point, ECU and NC State can finally be together.
I think the ACC can survive. They just need to take Boston College money and send it to Clemson.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
It's the Adam Gold Show. And much like pretty much every other sports radio show you'll hear in the country, there's a fill-in host this week for the Adam Gold Show. It is you. I'll have to ask my mom. You got the easy one. You is always right. I'll have to ask mom. It is I who am filling in for Adam Gold Show. Filling in for Adam Gold on the Adam Gold Show. Excuse me. Hayes Permar filling in. Yeah. It's the one week that guest hosts are guaranteed to get work every year. It's the week of 4th of July. Pretty much everyone takes up. Like, state legislature, congressional schedules, they all revolve around, yo, once 4th of July hits, we're breaking. Like,
yeah,
the whole world is just going to break. That includes the sports world. We declared sports over when the Stanley Cup ended when I was in here a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Obviously, no disrespect to our big Wimbledon and Tour de France fans that are out there. I know those are both going strong. We'll hit on those. And college sports did us a little bit of a favor by throwing us the old realignment nugget late last week.
Ah.
Because when I was bemoaning yesterday about how I did, you know, I had to figure out what I was going to talk on sports radio, one of the hosts of the 4th of July gathering I was at, the mother of the host was like, oh, what about all this conference realignment stuff? I was like, you need to come on the show and talk about it.
Bring her on.
I do hope everyone had a good 4th of July. It seemed like it was an odd one, a tough one to celebrate, especially when there was violence going on, gun violence in two cities, most notably in the suburb of Chicago there, the Highland Park, and then also in Philadelphia. And then specifically for women, but for a lot of folks, after on the heels of a Supreme Court ruling, it felt like a tough time to celebrate being an American or being America. But I don't see it that way. Everyone's always gonna be a little bit disappointed with whoever's in charge of the government, right? And I know that's understating what some people are feeling right now after the Supreme Court ruling. But I think that you don't have to be a perfect Christian to celebrate Christmas or Easter, right? Mm-hmm. Like, things don't have to be perfect at your church or in your own faith life. You don't have to have been welcoming to all and thoughtful of history you could still be in a fight with your family member and celebrate the fact that Thanksgiving is meant for that. So I sort of see it that way. Like, people who are out there striving to make America what they believe a better version of America can be is, that's great, and we have work to do, that is for sure. But I don't think that should take away from celebrating the 4th of July, our nation's history, our nation's birthday. Fireworks, still cool enough, especially the big city displays. I've done minor league baseball now for 7 or 8 years, so I see fireworks like every Friday night pretty much.
Yeah.
But when you see the big city displays, they are still pretty cool. The other thing I don't like, and that seems to come out hard on 4th of July, the people who are never happy brigade, you know these people.
Oh, yeah.
They dominate on, like, next door. Wherever the fireworks were in your town, like, they were better last year, or the parking was better, or some aspect of them was better. There's going to be people, and I understand fireworks are a hardship for pets and some veterans, but, like, we kind of know this, but we also have kind of accepted as a society, we're going to allow fireworks on 4th of July. So to just come out and, like, the day before and be like, no fireworks in my neighborhood, please. It's like, dude, come on. The complainers, it's a holiday to try and ignore them. It gets harder and harder to ignore complainers over time. Just the no fun police, people that just can't let you, you know, melt an ice cream cone on your hand and hold a sparkler and eat a hot dog and just be happy. Like, the complainers have to come out. So I hope, again, my thoughts were obviously affected and jarred by the instances of gun violence yesterday, as that continues to be a problem in our country. But I think in general, it's still okay to have celebrations and have holidays, even amidst tough times. I actually, interestingly enough, an old friend of mine that I used to be a camp counselor with, we were literally in the same cabin.
Camp Siegel?
Down at Camp Siegel on the coast, where they always celebrate 4th of July. Sometimes this is classic, and I think they did it this year. Sometimes 4th of July just fits better on a different day in your schedule. We've talked about this on the show before.
We have.
Like, should you be able to designate days of the week for all holidays, like we do for Thanksgiving? Perfect. You got Thanksgiving, and then you got a Friday off and the weekend, right? And it kind of stinks when certain holidays fall on certain days, like Christmas on a Sunday. No good for anybody.
No,
no good. 4th of July, Monday's not bad because you're going to celebrate all weekend.
Sure.
You're still getting a short week, so I'm okay with that. I think we even did the research.
Oh,
at
I did
one
the
point.
Research on this.
We set up, there's a year where like 4th of July and Christmas fall on a Thursday maybe, mm-hmm. and it was perfect because then same like Thanksgiving, you get the weekend. Easter's always going to be a Sunday. That works out well.
It's 2025.
So 2025, we're just going to lock in that calendar year.
2025.
Whatever, does it start on a Monday too?
4th of July is, let's see. It will start on a Wednesday.
Okay, that's fine.
That's fine.
But every year we will start on Wednesday, January 1st, mm-hmm. and then we get the perfect lineup of 4th of July
is on a Friday.
On a Friday. Okay,
which is perfect.
That's fine,
which is 100% perfect. Christmas falls on a Thursday.
Perfect, too.
Because you're going to take Friday
Thursday
off.
Thursday, take Friday. And Wednesday, you got Christmas. You basically get that whole half the week off. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. So you have the whole half of the week off. But then New Year's Eve is a Wednesday. And then you're just New Year's Day on Wednesday because you're just resetting the calendar.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Well,
it's wonderful.
But hold on. New Year's Eve is a Wednesday?
Yes.
Then New Year's Day will just be a day that like doesn't exist. It'll just be a holiday.
You're resetting the calendar.
Gotcha.
First.
Yeah. That's a little tricky because then it feels like we have to send people back to work on Friday, January 3rd. But I think if people would just ride with us on this, they'll just take the whole rest of the week off.
But they're just going to take the rest of the week off.
Yeah. I think that's how it goes.
I think it's going to be perfect. Because you'll work the 29th, the 30th, and then you'll get like 4 days off, then a weekend, then you're starting it all over.
The one thing
perfect.
I just.
Oh, and I also believe, sorry to interrupt.
No.
Halloween's also on a Friday.
Oh, 2025 has the perfect holiday calendar, and we're locking it in, and we're not changing. So everybody make room for that. We need to get on social media with this and just declare it. And then when 2025 starts approaching, we'll be like, yo, remember, we told you it's going to be a good year.
Exactly. I'll cut this video and post it.
The one thing that I discovered new on 4th of July, and this is one of those things where, like, much like happens on the internet over the course of the lifetime of the internet, which is what, going on close to 30 years, like 25 years now, it's been in like the mainstream, mm-hmm. right? Late 90s, it was all quirky. We were getting email addresses up there like now where we can't live without it daily, minute by minute in our phones, right? Mm-hmm. So a meme, I don't know how long memes take to happen, right? Like sometimes they're videos from long ago that they get brought back up and it becomes something. Sometimes it's like a joke within a small circle and then it becomes like a bigger circle and then eventually it's everybody. So I don't know where exactly in the evolution of a meme we are with Backup Terry. And like, I can't say for certain that yesterday was the first time I ever saw Backup Terry on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
But now, yesterday was the time where I feel like it flipped over, where like, multiple people texted it to me. It was like, this was the video that you had to watch on the 4th of July, even though it's several years older and it's probably been shared multiple times. I think it was partly somebody like wrote a little poem that went along with it. It was like, roses are red, fireworks are scary, putting it in reverse and Backup Terry. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to get on board. So I'm going to help you out right now. This is the thing that you need to learn about for 4th of July. So the next year when it comes around, you are ready for Terry. Should we do the audio first and then explain it, or explain in the audio? Here is Terry lighting audio. Here's the audio of Terry. I should light this audio on fire. Terry lighting fireworks and then in his wheelchair not getting away quickly enough. He's got a motorized chair and the fireworks are shooting off. And the person taking the video, who I guess knows enough fireworks to know that Terry's in no real danger, because Terry is like right there with fireworks firing seemingly under his foot. and cannot back up and get out of the way. He finally moves forward to get somewhat clear of it. But I wanted to bless you all with one more 4th of July backup Terry. Here it is.
Bag up, bag up. Bag up, Terry. Put it in reverse, Terry. Put it in reverse. Oh, Lord. Lord, Jesus. Oh, Lord. Oh, Jesus. What you doing, Terry? Terry, what you doing?
I must have watched that 20 times yesterday. Now, I would say that would be the perfect PSA for firecracker safety. Because, like, you should be, when you, every time you light up a firecracker, in your head, it should just instantly say, back up, Terry, put it in reverse. Because, like, once that thing's lit, you need to be getting away. You don't need to be adjusting anything. Once the fuse is lit, get away. But in a way, it's not a good PSA because Terry's kind of like laughing and smiling and he doesn't get injured. So you might be led to believe that, oh, fireworks can't be that harmful. And I don't think that's the message we want to send. No. But we're going to talk a little bit later about movies that should always play 24 hours or at least, you know, 16 hours of waking time on a certain day. But that video, Backup Terry, is now one that I'm watching every 4th of July. And then anytime I'm at a fireworks show where somebody's like lighting them manually, I'm throwing them a backup. That guy's name is Terry. Backup Terry! Put it in reverse! I mean, it's just fantastic. With a 4th of July behind us, let's take a look at some sports that happened. Let's get out the gate. First thing out the gate, the biggest sports headline in the state of North Carolina over a 4th of July weekend. Nobody left the ACC.
What?
The ACC still standing. Reports of the ACC's demise may have been slightly overstated, or at least for now. As we mentioned earlier, ain't nothing happening 4th of July. Everyone's on vacation, including university presidents, athletic directors, all the people that would be involved in one of those decisions. They've taken off. However, as the news last week of UCLA and USC to the Big Ten showed us, even if you're on vacation, you better not sleep. Wasn't it? Was it the Pac-12 commissioner that was like in Montana somewhere on vacation when he found out that? I mean, rest assured, I'm all about not even work-life balance. I'm about life way over work, right?
Sure.
As you know, maybe a little bit too much. But, like, so I'm all for, even if my man has important business, going with your family to Montana, you should go on that vacation. You should never be forced to say, well, I'm going to hang around in case one of my schools decide to leave. However, it seemed like it suggested that he didn't know it was coming. And so, and everyone says this, we don't trust each other. Oh, don't trust anyone. When you sit down at these meetings with the other university presidents, everybody says, we're not leaving. Don't trust him. When you sign an alliance with another conference that says, hey, we're not going to do any more transfer portal of schools. We ain't going to try and recruit. We're not going to do it. Like, don't trust them. Don't trust anyone. Here's the one thing that you do trust, right, is for money to rule all things and for, I mean, there aren't legal complications as in, like, no one's going to jail if they, you know, try and move the team out of a conference. But the when it becomes a legal issue, it costs more money and it becomes like a more complicated thing. So with that being said, everything money-wise points to the Big Ten and the SEC being the future of at least college football, if not college athletics. And we'll talk to some folks this week about how those two may or may not be separating at this point. It seems like they probably should have already, college football and the rest of college athletics. It seems silly to have the same rules governing this billion-dollar, you know, second or third biggest sports league in American sports, or, you know, versus men's and women's tennis, which are great sports and noteworthy, but like they shouldn't be treated the same as this billion-dollar industry, right? Mm-hmm. So for a while, it's kind of seemed silly to hold everything under the same umbrella of college sports. And it's frankly held back the value of college football players. I mean, there are athletes that are getting the benefit of NIL that never would have gotten the ability to, you know, teach tennis or golf lessons or sell your own t-shirts or do whatever it is or run your podcast or monetize your Instagram feed if you're a college athlete. None of that would have been possible if we weren't severely undervaluing college football and some college basketball athletes, right? And maybe a few other athletes here and there. So there's legal stuff to all this. Money will rule all things. But here's where I say the ACC is not quite dead yet. I have no doubt that Clemson, it's exploring all their options, right? Yeah. They're talking to
as
people.
As they should be.
But the grant of rights, and I know it's easy to say, you know, throw something out the window, just go do it. It does make it just a little more complicated. And, like, you can definitely go to court and try and fight your way out of an agreement that you signed a contract to, but that's going to cost you money, and ultimately you're probably have to settle at a number that's still going to be a lot of money. I don't know the exact details of, like, what the grant of rights says, but that was part of why they did it, was because we think we can make it really, really, really painful to leave the ACC, and that's what they wanted to do at the time, and they have. The question is also, I think schools have to ask themselves, do you blow up all your conference relationships for this college football entity that may be soon becoming its own thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm Jim Phillips, I'm on the phone with everybody in the college football world and saying, hey, let's not wreck all of our leagues. Let's figure out what to do with college football and what makes sense there. And not just, let's not have Duke and UNC leave for the Big Ten and all of a sudden they're soccer, lacrosse, everything else program that has this deep, rich history in the ACC be, you know, tossed aside for just the football TV contract, which seemingly is what it is right now.
That's my big thing is with the whole realignment is, are we losing what made college sports so great, which was matchups, traditions, you know, area, regional rivalries, fan bases? Are we ditching and scrapping all of that to chase TV money? At what point are we sacrificing what made college sports so great? That's my big concern is, for example, where I grew up in Virginia, obviously UVA was a big thing, but where I went to college and where I started my working life was in the Shenandoah Valley. Virginia Tech and West Virginia, huge rivalry.
Yep.
West Virginia and Pitt, huge rivalry. They don't play each other anymore because West Virginia had to go to the Big 12, and they lose all that because they had to get out of the Big East. So at what point are you sacrificing, again, what made you so great as college sports to just chase money?
Maryland's another one. I mean, chasing money is we talked about this with the Live Tour. It's one of those things where it's partly survival, but it's also partly like when money is good.
But it's there.
But yeah, I think of University of Maryland. They made a much safer decision to be in the Big Ten where they knew the money was going to be good. But I swear you talk to a lot of their fans, at least the one my age, close to my age or older. I have no idea what a 21-year-old fan is in College of Maryland right now thinks about being in the ACC versus the Big Ten. But yeah, to your point, I think a lot of them would say, I realized that we needed to do some things to get on better financial footing, but this wasn't the thing. I'd rather be in the ACC right now.
Yeah, I think it's just, when you talk about with Phillips and the people in power, need, in my opinion, to find a way to make sure that they still blend that tradition with still giving us or still maximizing the dollars, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Like, I still don't want to see – I have no skin in the game regarding USC and Notre Dame, but I still love watching them play.
Yeah.
I think those things still need to happen.
So you want Notre Dame to join the Big Ten, I see.
No.
That's
no,
what you
I
want.
No,
what
I want them ACC Big Ten Challenge, Notre Dame, USC.
The other issue why it may be a little more complicated is this. Again, I can't really speak wisely to Clemson. I have no idea. Other than the I do think the grant of rights is a little more of a wall or a hurdle than some people think. Specifically around here, the names that you heard were Duke and UNC going to the Big Ten, right? Here's Duke would be obviously because they are beyond a name brand in college basketball. They sort of are the name brand of college basketball. UNC, it's a combination of big, big, big name in college basketball and a big enough name universally in sports that their football makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Duke is a private school, and they can do whatever they want in that regard, right? I don't think it'll be that easy, but they can. North Carolina, in case you haven't paid attention to, like, the North Carolina legislature, the UNC Board of Governors, the Board of Trustees, all those things in the last, 10 or so years. Actually, heck, let's go their whole lifetime. Like, UNC ain't going to be just free to make whatever decision they want to make in that regard. Mm-hmm. We've seen state legislatures in the state try to get involved in, making like ECU play State and UNC. We've seen most recently, we've seen the North Carolina State Legislature get involved with the North Carolina High School Athletic Association.
Yeah.
Too involved in some ways. Ultimately, they got a compromise that was just a little more oversight. And I think the NCHSA, a great organization, is still running things themselves. But for a while, it was a total takeover, right?
And you also think as well that Brian Murphy reported on at WREL about how the state put in like $15 million line item basically to keep the ACC in North Carolina.
100%. Yeah, we just saw that, right? We saw a different state legislature, but nearby. We saw Virginia get involved when it came with trying to make a power move to get Virginia Tech in the ACC. So if you think that whoever, even if they would do it, even if they could do it continually by, you know, get out of the ACC, all that stuff, if you think the University of North Carolina can just up and extricate itself from the other, from NC State, and, I mean, obviously, it's a different ballgame with App and ECU, but they are all part of the North Carolina system. And I don't think it's just as easy as snapping your fingers. Again, I can't speak to the California school system, university system, or whatever, or how UCLA or USC could, you know, move quickly.
Well, USC is a private school,
but it ain't happening. I'm not saying it would never happen. I'm just saying it ain't going to be that easy, and it would not come without. A lot of, I don't know if the legislature would decide to get involved, but there would be legislatures saying we should get involved. I checked in with some of my sources over there at the legislature. Guess what they said when the UCLA-USC news broke late last week in regards to what would happen if UNC tried to leave? You know what they said?
Who are they?
My sources inside the North Carolina legislature. I've got many. They said, it's July 4th weekend, man. Everybody just packed up and left. There have been no discussions about that since.
Of course.
So, as we said, everybody takes vacation. But I am telling you, as a North Carolinian, I have lived here. I've seen the legislature try and get involved in such things. And I'm telling you, they would get involved if North Carolina ever tried to leave the ACC. I think it matters. In this state, we always brag about having four Division I FBS schools pretty close to each other, like within three very, very close to each other. And the state of North Carolina values that. And having one go, you know, join the Big Ten is not something that they're just going to sit by and watch happen. So that was the big news of the weekend, is that nothing happened to the ACC. On to other semi-sports-related things. Let's power through these. Next up, Joey Chestnut. They're like raising the bar for him. It's like American Ninja Warrior, and they just keep throwing more obstacles at him because it's not enough for him to sit and crush everyone at hot dog eating. This time he came in wearing a walking boot. So he was injured. I don't know how that really affects your eating, but whatever.
You're standing the whole time.
He came in on crutches. I'll give him the pass on that. The injury, hurt him. Whatever. He said he was in pain. Then, and this was legit. You could see this. He had to deal with protesters.
Yeah,
like multiple ones rushing the stage. One actually got on stage, and he had to handle security. Where are you, Joey Chestnut? Yeah. Is pausing between dogs to take down a guy in a Darth Vader mask, saying, Smithfield is the Death Star?
Like,
is that what the sign
says? Expose Smithfield's Death Star.
To be clear, this is not Smithfield's chicken and barbecue that they're going after. This is the larger Smithfield pork. But they did say Smithfield's because they were saying Smithfield's Death Star. But I know my friends over at Smithfield's Chicken and Barbecue always like for me to make that clear delineation. Mm-hmm. This is Smithfield pork owned by a company in China, I believe now. Can't remember exactly, but anyway, Joey Chestnut won again. 63 dogs in buns, 15 and a half more than his next nearest competitor was Jeffrey Esper. If we're going to keep doing this, we got to shake it up. Somebody's got to step up and challenge Joey Chestnut. There's got to be a big enough eater up there, but we need a live tour of of eating because we need somebody to make the pot richer. Like, whatever it is to challenge Joey Chestnut, the money ain't worth it.
So we need teams, is what you're
saying. No, we don't need teams.
I want tag team hot dog eating, Hayes.
But if you said, I'll give $10 million to the person that can take down Joey Chestnut, we'd have a lot more dudes trying.
Yeah.
Also, Miki Sudo, I never know if I'm saying her name right. Miki Sudo ate 40 hot dogs. She's won 8 of the 9 last competitions. The only one she didn't win, she was pregnant. Being totally like dumb caveman guy, don't you get more hungry when you're pregnant? She should have tried at least, right? Anyway, she didn't do it last year. Next up, getting out of the gate. Wimbledon. Here's how I see it. My good friend Brian Geisinger is going to stop in just a minute. We're going to talk mostly hoops, but I should give him some time to talk Wimbledon if we wanted. There was in the Elite Eight, what they call it, the quarterfinals. Yeah. Quarterfinals, there were eight men, and I knew four of them. That's pretty darn good. Okay. Everybody knows Djokovic and Nadal. Taylor Fritz is American. And then that Kyrgios guy, because he always does, you know, crazy stuff. Some of it actually, like, really bad. I don't feel like getting into that. Mm-hmm. But I knew at least half of those. So as long as one of them wins. Djokovic is actually in a five-setter right now that he's going to win.
He actually won it.
Oh, it's over. He won. He was down two sets. He's like 9-1. Now he's 10-1 all time in five setters at Wimbledon. Djokovic, like, ain't afraid to just drop some sets early and then just set people up for the long run. On the women's side, as a casual fan, I'm just saying a little more bleak in that Simona Halep was like the only name I recognized in the final eight. I didn't even know the Amanda Anisimova, and she was American. So we'll see who comes out on the women's side of the draw. Four of the eight dudes left, I knew they were. Let's place your bets. I'm going big on the American Taylor Fritz. That's teasing my picks a little bit later. And then finally, getting out of the gate, Tiger played golf this weekend. This, a lot of people that like say they'll never watch the LIV Tour are kind of telling on themselves when they're like, but I was watching the JP McManus Pro-Am. Like, I'm all about, you know, not being a fan of the LIV Tour. That's fine. But don't act like if Tiger were on the LIV Tour, like, you'd be watching it. You know what I mean? Like, your morals would be out the window. If you say you're not watching it for moral reasons, you're really just not watching it because it's not interesting enough. Tiger played, shot a 77 in the JP McManus Open. This is the, you know, you go over there 2 weeks before the British Open, get your body clock adjusted, play a little golf, play whatever grass and styles they have over there. It's like a warm-up. He shot a 77, but he did chip in for eagle. Here's what it sounded like.
Tiger attempting to play a little low sucking spinner.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. Shall we run that back?
A little low sucking spinner?
Yeah.
Is that what he said?
I think we can run that back here for you.
Tiger attempting to play a little low sucking spinner.
Hey, it worked.
All right. Tiger played the low sucking spinner and he chipped in for eagle there. Back here in the States, JP Poston went wire to wire in the John Deere Classic. He's the winner there. And he is in for the Wyndham Championship that announced by the Wyndham today. That's in Greensboro about a month from now. My good friend Brian Geisinger has stopped in studio, bringing summer vibes with him. Got a Kemba Walker t-shirt on. Where's Kemba going to play basketball next?
I mean, maybe he'll be in Charlotte. We'll see. Because
on a really, really low contract.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Right. Yes. So, you know, once, I believe, you know, the buyout with the Pistons, I think that is complete.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, after that, he would theoretically have he'd be able to choose whomever was interested. The Hornets do need a backup point guard, by the way, too. So maybe. Who knows?
Kemba Walker.
He'll be on a roster next season in the NBA. It's just going to be, I don't know, in a much limited capacity than what we are used to seeing him.
Is that going to be anybody's one, two, or three option?
No, that window is closed.
Or paid as such. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll talk some more NBA. We're in the middle of NBA free agency right now. Like, in theory, could we hear about a trade or a signing go down during the show?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're still waiting to hear on Kevin Durant,
yep,
possible trades. We're still waiting to hear on DeAndre Ayton as a, you know,
big signing.
He's still yet to sign a contract or agree to terms. Colin Sexton is another restricted free agent. So, yeah, there is some stuff that could happen. It could also drag out for a little bit. You know, a couple more weeks or whatever.
Was it, I guess it was during the, when we had the weird time, the calendars for sports were all thrown off during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because there was sometimes where it felt like, yo, we're going to free agency and then we just ended the season. We're going to start another season. So, like, free agency is going to be 2 days.
Yeah.
And you're going to find out where everybody's going down. And it felt more like a reality show.
The end of the 2020 NBA season, like, Lakers win the bubble title.
And then it was draft, free agency.
It was draft, free agency camp. And the draft were 1 week apart. And then training camp was, like, yeah, a month after that. Because it was just a couple weeks after that. Because the season started days before Christmas.
I wonder if there'll be, I'm sure there will be, like, think pieces of, like, the draft classes that went through that and, like, who got helped or hurt by it.
The trickle downs of that are, like, I mean, we see it all the time in, I think we're seeing it a lot in college basketball too. I think it's awesome that someone like Tre'Quavion Smith plays at NC State, which seems like it was his dream school, and he's back as one of the best players in the country this year. But it is also like, you know, maybe more teams would have noticed Tre'Quavion Smith if he hadn't like lost a season or two seasons of prep basketball. And I do think there are like from a development standpoint, not Tre'Quavion Smith because he's amazing, but there are some other guys that you just saw get drafted or that are still in college or entering college that are probably like slightly behind the eight ball from a development standpoint, just because, again, they missed multiple seasons at a time where it's really important to be able to practice and train and, you know, play lots of games.
Well, like I said, we'll be seeing pieces and we're seeing pieces like that in society of like, let's study these pandemic kids 10 years and 20 years out, and it'll be the same with sports. All right, we'll talk more NBA in a little bit, but I feel like just trying to take the pulse of for me here in the Triangle, I've been traveling a little bit this summer. Right now, the conversation at the pool, average dude sitting there, if they're talking sports, they're asking what's happening with conference realignment after they saw. Obviously, we knew a year ago or more, I can't remember, that Oklahoma and Texas went to the
I think that was last July.
SEC.
So a year ago.
And they made sense because unlike, you know, the last wave of big-time conference realignment, you know, it was like not super marquee teams, and it was everybody just sort of adjusting and buffering against being rated, like proving yourself as being a raider and not being rated, right? Like think of ACC versus Big East. But so Oklahoma and Texas were like, they were big. They were almost entities in and of themselves, so it didn't seem like it necessarily started off another wave. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there was this now, I mean, it was laughable kind of at the time, now even more laughable alliance between the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 that seemed to, if nothing else, it seemed to say, hey, we've agreed not to shuffle teams around, right? Like, we saw what just happened, and they didn't come out and explicitly say it, but it was like, well, what are you even forming, right? It felt like the unspoken was, we're not kicking off another wave of realignment, right? Like, that just happened, realignment.
They made sure to hammer that in place with a firm handshake.
Yes. And so then we turn around, and UCLA and USC are gone. That, again, has raised speculation. The classic is, I mean, we do this in our text thread of like, now going over 20 years, we've seen ridiculous reports of there are people out there willing to make the crazy claim so that if it's true, they'll always be the guy that's like, I called West Virginia to the ACC or I called, you know, Alabama going independent, ECU to the SEC or whatever. Somebody is willing to dubiously claim that so that if it goes through, they can be like, guy who claimed it, right?
Right.
But once somebody said, oh, I hear UCLA and USC are leaving, and people are like, I'll wait for somebody real to report it. Then the real thing got reported, and then guys like, I told you. Yeah. And then everybody's like, well, what do you got next? Source or message board person? Now that message board person is saying Duke and UNC to the Big Ten. And so that's one of the rumors that everybody talks about.
Mountaineer 42069. Yeah, he was all over this in like 2011.
Everybody laughs at him, and then one of his random conspiracy theories come true, and everybody's like, what you got for us now? Yeah. What do you think it stands currently as far as rumors of either Clemson departing? The biggest properties in the ACC seem to be Clemson, in some order, Clemson, Miami, Florida State, UNC, Virginia. Am I missing somebody?
Duke, Notre Dame. In State always gets, you know, they're like a crumb thrown in at the end.
I'm saying ones that are in the ACC now, and I wasn't counting Notre Dame, but obviously, yes, they're the biggest one out there. And Duke, obviously, because their men's basketball is beyond a brand name, they are basically the brand of college basketball.
Correct.
That carries enough weight that even in a college football world, they'd be, you know, worthy. So of those schools, like what – when you obviously, if something breaks, you're gonna have to report about it. Like, what are you watching? What are you looking for? And what are you hearing, reading about the current news that guys at the pool can gossip about what they've heard?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like there are all these like existential factors where everyone with the ACC should be worried, right? I mean, you're seeing why UCLA and USC moved to the Big Ten. It does feel like after Texas and Oklahoma announced last year that they were gonna leave for the SEC, that everything went into like, oh, it's going to be SEC versus everybody. And here comes the alliance to contend with that. But it's like, it's really the bi-coastal nature of it is turning into being SEC versus Big Ten, right? Because they make the most money. They have the most successful, you know, conference specific TV networks, the Big Ten network backed by Fox, the SEC network backed by Disney and ESPN. Like, you know, Disney and Fox are two of the biggest, you know, companies in the entire world. So I do think that that's a little interesting that it's not that it's changed from being SEC versus everyone to like now the two superpowers seem to be SEC versus the Big Ten. And it's like it's impossible to ignore just how much more in terms of like average payout those two yeah. conferences can shell out to their schools.
That's when you look
they're doubling all the other Power Five conferences to the point now where it's like, is it really even apples to apples to compare the ACC to the Big Ten
yeah.
or the Pac-12 to the SEC? You know, it feels different. Despite all of those sort of like existential concerns and the financial realities that are impossible to ignore, including the fact that the ACC network has been like a little bit of a boon for the league,
right.
but maybe not this like crazy money bonanza. I mean, it's had so many issues getting off the ground, getting in and getting on different cable providers and like key demographics of the ACC's footprint. But there was something last week where there was, you know, a conference call with ACC ADs. And I think Jim Phillips was a part of that call. And all the reporting from that, the temperature check was everyone seemed to be kind of okay.
Yep.
So I don't know, maybe I guess the priority now is sort of trying to figure out like, can you get Notre Dame to come in
yes.
as a full-time member, which is something that they've been like flirting with for literally a decade now. I mean, it's been 10 full years.
Well, now you're even more worried. It used to be, can you get them if you can? But I guess the second best was, well, if you don't get them, at least nobody else is, right? That
you're
was
right.
the whole point of
right.
setting up the,
right.
if you're going to stay with us, you're going to play at least four ACC games a year, I think what it is.
Yeah.
But now that, the dynamic of they're not going anywhere else, I feel like has changed once, like you added USC.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Big Ten has USC, Michigan State, three very traditional Notre Dame rivals,
yeah.
and you know the rest of them are all pretty geographic, you know.
And just the money can be like impossible to ignore.
And then the money.
And I do think that like, you know, Jim Phillips can feel very comfortable in, at least for the time being, with the ACC's grant of rights, like the media rights. Like
I mentioned this earlier, I'm not David yeah. Glenn. I can't tell you like the details
yeah.
of every, but I just do know that I think people who dismiss that and say, oh, well, Clemson could just pee on that and go wherever they want,
yeah.
or like,
yeah, not, $52 million. Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, yeah. not quite. And Maryland, I feel like, left and then challenged whatever the ACC
yeah.
said. And so inevitably somebody would do that. But ultimately, like, it ain't going to be
mm-hmm.
as easy as some people just think you could snap.
And that was also with a previous grant of media rights. Do I have that correct, too? In fact, I think Maryland leaving, that was challenged along the lines of the grant of media rights that was established in 2013,
right.
which, long time ago, you and I were a part
right
of the David Glenn
breaking.
Show when he broke the story that day. This is a deal that was signed in 2016 that theoretically runs through for 20 years. I guess there have to be questions about like if a university challenged that, would it hold up in a court of law if it went to that point? But right now, that buyout is a pretty serious like barrier for teams that would maybe look to jump from the ACC. But like, it's not permanent. They're falling behind. And as Joe Giglio has pointed this out several times recently on Twitter, of like, yes, Swofford in this first round of expansion was able to lock down and as the ACC could have been rated, it wasn't. But they added, you know, Boston College, Syracuse, Pittsburgh, and just some programs that just haven't really added a lot in terms of like a fan base or a media market.
It was like we said
whatever.
Earlier, it was to establish themselves as a hunter versus the hunted,
yeah,
right? We added
exactly.
teams just to show that we're not going to lose teams.
But now that you're looking up, it's like, oh, they didn't get, you know, they didn't get West Virginia for reasons that I guess are academic related, or I'm not entirely sure. But
maybe,
like,
but my mom always takes that personally. But yes, I do think there was a little bit of a little bit of yeah, we're looking down our noses at West Virginia by not adding them.
I do, which like
and
now
then,
is one
then
of those
we took Louisville.
Well, it's also like it seems like the Big Ten is the actual conference that's doing more of the sort of like, we're really looking at your academics to make sure
right.
you're an AAU, affiliated university. If we're gonna add you, also the lesson to everyone should be, college is like whatever you make it. You can go anywhere and go become a doctor or like join NASA after that. So people need to chill out on, you know, where in fact you got your degree from, in my humble opinion. But then the other thing too is Dan Wetzel brought this up. I had totally forgotten about this until he reported on this late last week, which was he wrote for YahooSports.com. By the way, I can't believe in 2022 I am still forced to occasionally go to Yahoo Sports. Like Chris Haynes breaks an NBA story, or Dan Wetzel has a thoughtful piece on college sports. I'm like, I cannot believe I'm going to Yahoo
Still
Sports.
In the league.
Still here. But this the tweet was 6 months ago, the Pac-12 and ACC rejected a golden ticket football playoff plan with automatic bids and a cut of a $1 billion revenue pie. It may go down as the most ill-advised decision in college athletics. And if you remember, like for the last year, going back to kickoff last season, Jim Phillips, apparently with the support of like other coaches in the ACC, including someone like Dave Clawson, who was like of Wake Forest, who was like very vocal about like not wanting to expand the playoff, not wanting it to go to, I guess, six teams. And there were certain stipulations in terms of like who would get an automatic bid. And it does seem like perhaps that could prove to be like a fatal blow. I think the current 14 playoff is signed through 2026.
Sounds right.
I think, or it's either 2024, 2026. And after that, when it comes time to renegotiate that deal, the ACC is not going to have nearly as big of a seat at the bargaining table as it did when the first one was hammered out a decade ago.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's one of those things where like I take it a day at a time, because as someone who covers the ACC and grew up following the ACC, it's like, I guess like it does seem like there could be some pain and some doom on the other side here, but I don't know. Like until it happens, it's like you can't. I don't know. I can't be worried about it. If I were Jim Phillips, I would be sweating buckets about it. Like here I am trying to move, you know, like, you know, bilk money out of the state of North Carolina so I can move the headquarters down I-77. When really, like, you probably have bigger problems than figuring out where the headquarters of the league are supposed to be.
Yep. Talking conference realignment with Brian Geisinger, ACCSports.com. He's not saying that Duke and UNC are never absolutely not going anywhere, but kind of like me, there's a few more hurdles than I think people think to them just completely jumping ship. That's not to say that it can't happen, but not to revisit the conversation. I think we're more likely to see a newly defined college football division than we are to see a decimated ACC. Does that make sense? Like that might involve an ACC where some of the teams are playing in that division and some are not, but the ACC is still by and large kept intact. Does that make sense?
I think that could make sense. Or just like the ACC looks to add teams and sometimes, you know, somehow solidify itself. Or I don't know. It's like
get ECU fans all excited there.
It's not dead yet. They have like options to play. Just urgency is probably of the mind here.
All right. I looked at the weather today. I was like, what's it going to be like this week? I'm trying to plan when I can take my dogs to the dog parks. I'm doing the Adam Gold show in the middle of the week. I'm like, what's it going to look like? And I made the mistake of like opening up my weather app and actually looking day by day what the weather might be like. When I remembered, we're in July. Even June can have some mercurial, like full-on weeks that feel like summer, and then it might pull back a little bit. You know, you might get or you might have like the 3 days of rain or the 1 day, 1 week without any rain, right? But not July. July has one weather forecast for the day. And you ready? Here it is. I'm going to give it to you. You can cut this. There's the weather music. Wake up, North Carolina. Here is your weather today. If you want to do something outside without sweating, you get to do it before 7 a.m. Because when you wake up, it's going to be 70 degrees and it'll be 85 by 10 a.m. High humidity. High temperatures reaching the low to mid 90s, but the real feel will get all the way up to the high 90s, even 100. And this afternoon, around 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, maybe 5 o'clock, there is a 60% chance of a thunderstorm. If you're at the beach, it'll be about 5 degrees cooler, but feel about 5 degrees warmer. And if you're in the mountains, you can take the temperatures down about 15 degrees, right? You wake up in the 60s, maybe 55, highs in the mid 70s. But no, every day, your weather is wake up, get up before 7 if you want to walk without sweating, 7:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. It's about 80 degrees to 90 degrees, feels like 95. From noon to 5 p.m., feels like it's over 100. Two-thirds of a chance that it's going to be a thunderstorm. Now, post-thunderstorm, might feel real good for a couple hours. Balmy, beautiful sky, 10 degrees lighter, but that thunderstorm might not hit. And somehow, even though there's a 60% chance of a thunderstorm, it's only going to hit like 1 out of 5 times. How does that work? How do those odds work, huh?
Got to get Moose on the phone.
That's not 60%. That is your July weather report. Also, like, bring a change of underwear, okay? It's swampy underwear season. BG, are you a North Carolina weather fan? Does this deter you from North Carolina summers?
I am not the biggest fan of North Carolina summers. In fact, I often like to escape to the Pacific Northwest during the summers, but that's not going to happen this year, unfortunately.
No, you got to stick it out. It is sticky, and the weather is the same every... Go look at your app. Your app, cover up the days, and you cannot tell the difference for the next 2 weeks. It's all the same in July.
This is the Adam Gold Show.